It is my delight to welcome regular guest Chris Carey, who volunteers his time each week to select and research our classic picks of the week and then brings them in with his facts and findings on that classic release. Welcome, as always, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought in some CCR.
Yeah, some CCR. I just, a protest band and ironically or not, I just saw a SWAT, like, armored vehicle drive past the... Drive past here on Congress. So, CCR, this was their fourth album and third album to be recorded in 1969. Came out November 2nd, 50 years ago. So 50 years ago this week, CCR, you know, they were a huge band in the 60s and early 70s. In my opinion, they're still a huge band. They were kind of unique in the time is that they really were combining a lot of stuff. They were combining roots rock, swamp rockers, and southern rock, rockabilly, blues, country, and even R&B. I can hear in a lot of what they do, I hear Booker T and the MGs.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, it's funny because they were a San Francisco-based band, but they were always singing about the bayou and the swamp and the South for whatever reason.
This a big garnishing of green onions, if you will.
Yes, yes, definitely. Definitely some green onions and stuff from Muscle Shoals in Louisiana. And, you know, they, like I said, they knew each other. Half the band had been the drum, the bass, the rhythm section had been friends since junior high. They formed in high school, and they originally called themselves the Blue Velvets. And in 1964, they actually signed to Fantasy Records, a San Francisco-based label, under the name the Gollywogs, which is not probably the best band name ever.
Sounds like a group of Muppets.
Yeah, it totally sounds like a group of Muppets. And they got a little bit of national success, but not mostly kind of local. And then they were interrupted when both, of course, John Fogerty and Tom Fogerty, brothers, and then Stu Cook, the bassist. John Fogerty and Stu Cook both had gotten draft notices in 1966. And at that time in 66, you still had the option to join the reserves. And so rather than going to Vietnam, in the Army, they joined the, I think John Fogerty joined the Army Reserves and Stu Cook joined the Coast Guard Reserves. And so they served for 2 years. And then when they got back, they got the band back together and then renamed themselves as Creedence Clearwater Revival in 1968. And they released their self-titled debut in 1969 and got a national success with their cover of Susie Q, which was originally done by Dale Hawkins in 1957. Rolling Stones and several other people have covered that song. It's a highly coverable song. Pressed, I think, to find many other bands that did this much in so many years. I think the only other band that I can think of any note that released three albums in 1 year was maybe the Beatles in their early period when they were really more poppy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they released this album in late 68, you know, and it went platinum. And then they released Bayou Country in January of 69, Green River in August of 69. And those both went platinum eventually. Bayou Country had the singles Proud Mary and Born on the Bayou, and Green River had the title track and Bad Mood on the Rise. So CCR was thrust into superstardom pretty quick. I would say meteoric is a good adjective for their rise. And with all of this attention in August of 69, so on top of doing three albums in 1 year, they also played Woodstock, one of the you know, most prominent set times at Woodstock. And they were making TV appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show, touring the entire time, too. So it's kind of crazy how much they did in 1 year.
It is.
And, I mean, eventually that kind of stress that was...
caught up with them.
Yeah, was in, you know, and John Fogerty kind of... At the very beginning of the band, it was much more democratic, but from 68 on, John Fogerty kind of took control of the band, both with regard to creative and business kind of aspects of the band. And he really ran it kind of like a despot. And the rest of over time, that's why the band kind of burned out so soon. I mean, he left in 1970. I mean, they put out two albums in 1972, six albums in 3 years is kind of crazy. And they all had hits on them too. They all went platinum eventually too. I mean, it's kind of amazing. Recording was done at, for this album was done at at Willie Hader Studios that was in San Francisco, which was kind of at the focal point of San Francisco at the time. And all the famous San Francisco bands recorded there, including like Jefferson Airplane and Steve Miller Band. That, incidentally, I thought was kind of interesting. That's the studio that Glenn Johns, the famous producer, got his start as an engineer. And, of course, he went on and worked with pretty much everybody from the late 60s and throughout the early 80s. John Fogerty was producer on this record, and he produced every album that CCR did, except for the last one, which was actually released without him. The very last CCR album was released as a trio when John Fogerty had left the band. The first album was co-produced, and I'm totally forgetting that right now, who it was co-produced with. So on top of John Fogerty writing the songs, the lead singer, the lead guitar player, and the producer, he was kind of
steering the whole show.
So yeah, he was kind of
getting ready to later on. Am I remembering right that he somehow got sued for plagiarizing himself?
Yeah, and it was and I don't know all the ins and outs of that.
Yeah,
but basically, much longer, like in the 80s, when he was doing a lot, when he was having a lot of success with his solo career, he wrote a song that Fantasy at the time still owned part of to get out of what he wanted to get out of with the band and with the label. They owned all the CCR rights.
And it sounded gee whiz like a CCR.
Well, and I mean, I believe the riff in the song that they were suing him over was very almost identical to a riff in a song he wrote before, but he wrote it. So it kind of makes sense that if he wrote it, you know, and he's writing other songs, they're going to be similar. So I think he kind of got out of it. But yeah, it was kind of weird that he got sued for sounding too much like himself.
And yeah.
It's kind of a
very bizarre.
Yeah, it's very Kafka-esque. Critically, this album from the get-go was got wide acclaim. I mean, Rolling Stone said that it was the best CCR album yet. Pretty much most people thought that, and I still think today most people think that the three 69 albums and Cosmos Factory in 70 are kind of considered the kind of the golden era of CCR, but it's still kind of hailed as one of the best albums that they did, and probably one of the best albums of the Vietnam, you know, period, the Vietnam era. I was talking to my wife about this weekend. I still see, you know, Fortunate Son, which was actually the B-side of Down on the Corner. I couldn't remember right now. So there was really one single, and it was Down on the Corner, but the B-side was Fortunate Son, and they both charted in the top 40.
Yeah, and that song still sounds utterly electrifying. It really does.
I would argue it's in the top five best protest songs of all time.
I'm with you on that.
And because it's not just a protest about Vietnam. It's a social protest. It's a pretty powerful song. And still to this day, if you hear the lyrics, you can't help but get a little bit, you know, like up in arms a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as I was telling you off mic before, it was probably, this was a while ago. It was about 15 years ago. But Slater Kenny had it in a regular part of their set was covering Fortunate.
Yeah, it's a great song. And I still you'd be hard pressed to find too many movies that came out about Vietnam that don't have that song in
right.
it. But you know, you could go on forever about this record. It is an amazing record, and you know, if somebody really hasn't listened to CCR that much, and I get it, you know, because they were kind of burned really bright and quick and went away. And for younger people out there that maybe haven't looked into it that much, this is a great album to start with because it's amazing from the first note to the last. I think that, too, is that what they were doing, them along with Graham Parsons, I think really are responsible for what became country rock and then alternative country. And I don't think we would have ever had an Uncle Tupelo or a Wilco or numerous other bands if it wasn't for CCR and Graham Parsons.
Yeah, critical component of that evolution. And I also just, like, personally, you know, over the year, I've been listening to music since I could breathe, practically. And even as my tastes have changed over the years and I've gotten into different things or been more interested in one particular area, they always love Creedence.
Yeah,
always.
It's good.
I love it just as much as I did when I was a teenager.
And it's funny, almost every song that they do, I could easily see it being covered as either old-timey honky-tonk song or a punk song.
Either
any of them could be played that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We could talk about this one forever, couldn't we? But we should get into your first selection.
So yeah, this is one of two protests. You know, Fortunate Son is the big protest song on the album, but Effigy, the last track on the album, was also a protest song and less about politics and war the politics of war, I should say, and economics. This has a lot to do specifically with Nixon and his contempt for his critics and his contempt for the youth counterculture. And anyway, it's a great song. And the guitar parts, in, I mean, Fogerty's guitar playing in this song is pretty amazing, too.
Excellent. I'm talking with Chris Carey about our classic pick of the week, Willie and the Po' Boys by Creedence Clearwater Revival.